Welcome to the Ageless Wonders podcast, where we explore the dynamic fusion of aging well, vitality, balanced living, and pop culture. We are your hosts, Todd Gimble and Jonye Lyon.
Yeah, so, we're on.
So today we are very excited and fortunate to have a special guest, our first octogenarian guest, the amazing Frank Gimble, who also happens to be my dad. So, Dad, welcome to the show.
Welcome,
it's
Frank.
It's a delight to look at your two handsome faces across the country. And I am very honored to have been invited to have this chat with you. And I hope that some of my historical experiences will be entertaining to you and whoever else takes the time to observe and listen to this dialogue.
Well, of course, we will have an audience of millions someday.
At some point.
But now it's probably just going to be friends and family, but that's okay. So first of all, I know you're coming to us from my hometown and your hometown of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I see you have an old Packer thing behind you there on your desk.
I was just going to make a note of that photo in the background. What tell us about that picture in the background.
That is the genre of the Vince Lombardi time. And so there's Paul Hornung and Jim Taylor and Bart Starr.
Bart Starr is there at the top.
Yeah. And it's I'll lift it up for you before we finish today. But it's something that I bought at one of these golf outings or something at auction. And it has a value of nostalgia. And as people from small cities like Green Bay, Wisconsin can say, we have a loud voice. And our presence is recognized and heard all over the world. And that's literally true.
That's true. Well, and you've been a Packer. Well, when the Packers used to play in Milwaukee, I mean, you had seasons like going back to what I did.
When I was much younger than you are now, Todd, before you were born, I used to go watch the Packers play at State Fair Park.
And, really?
They would get crowds of maybe 4,000 or 5,000 people come and watch the Packers. And then they moved up into and shared the ballpark with the Milwaukee Braves, who were in County Stadium, and then the Milwaukee Brewers. And then they decided that they were a Green Bay-based team, and they decided to play all their games at Lambeau Field in Green Bay, and they've been there for decades now.
That's true. I remember you took me to a game at County Stadium when I was a kid against the expansion at that time, Atlanta Falcons. And I think the Packers won like 56-0 or something like that.
That was a good one. Game, but I'll take your word for it.
That's the first game I ever
got a question, though. Did you happen to attend the Ice Bowl?
I did not in person, the capacity at Lambeau Field is, I think, now about 80,000, but there were about 700,000 people who said they were at the game. So there may be some level of exaggeration about the loyalty.
We have to ask them to show us the ticket stuff.
Yeah. So Pop, how old are you, first of all? I know, but you can tell us.
Well, I'm 88 years old. I was born in 1936. To parents who were young. My mother was 22 years old. My dad was 24. Neither of them ever went to college. My dad worked in various different jobs, not as a professional, but he had a tavern, he had a liquor store, and then he became a commissioned salesman, and he had a great gift of gab. And he was a very successful salesman, and he had a mission statement. And his mission statement was that the fact that his parents had emigrated from Eastern Europe, and he received a high school education in Wisconsin, he wanted his family to take the next step up and do better. And he always oriented both myself and my brother to the highest education that we possibly could get. He had two brothers who were lawyers, and that was kind of the aspirational goal that his two kids would be lawyers or doctors, and neither one of us had A, the inclination, or B, the intellect to go down the medical field. So we were kind of biological bullshitters, and we went into the law.
Ah, yes. Well, followed by your sons.
I was just going to say, so it came all the way down the family line then.
Oh, it's totally in the genes.
We have lots of folks that are lawyers. Just for an example, I am a lawyer. My brother, who sadly passed away when he was 58 years old, some 30 plus years ago, was a lawyer. I have three sons, who are lawyers, and a son-in-law who's a lawyer.
That's so true.
We have lawyers well represented the family. And
yeah, and Todd, your brother, one of them works with you at the firm, correct?
Yes, my second son, Todd's brother, Joshua, moved over from a large corporate law firm to this firm about 10 years ago, and he is one of the senior partners here. I still hang out because I have observed and I've experienced that people who reach my age, who stop working, who stop pretending to be involved, or literally aren't involved, get old and die. And my end game, if you will, is not to die. Getting old is something that I have no control over. But
sure.
I have some control over my health and well-being. And I find that health and well-being are positively impacted by people who do stuff. So I'm trying to continue to do stuff.
I love that. And you're keeping the brain sharp and getting up and going to the office every day. There are dozens and dozens of studies that will actually complement exactly what you said.
Validate that, and
reinforce that. That you know, we here in the United States tend to chase that dangling carrot of retirement.
Yeah.
And then, to your point, once our elderly get to that retirement point and they don't have hobbies, they usually go into mental decline pretty quickly, mental and physical decline pretty quickly.
I think that's true. Now, I do take a couple of months off and I go down to Florida. We have a home in Florida, my wife and I. And while I'm down there, I'm very involved in recreational activities. I play golf. I go to the fitness center there a couple times a week. I read quite a bit when I'm there, enjoy the weather. And I think that also complements my staying alive because I don't have ice to slip on.
Yes.
I'm not, good point. Thank God, because
we know you have slipped on it.
You know, clothes that kind of restrict your movements. So I live a life that is kind of dreamlike in the sense because I choose to do what I do. And I have been fortunate enough to see my way through with good medical doctors, a couple of life-threatening health issues. But here I am talking to you two pillars of excellence in both physical and mental well-being. And I feel plenty good for an old cocker, 88 years old.
Amazing, yeah, amazing. So, Dad, tell us like a little. You were an athlete, a high school athlete. You were a big college intramural. Give me a little history of kind of your athletic background and your physical prowess back in the day, and how you've kind of moved that forward.
Well, we grew up in a kind of a poor neighborhood, and in the early days of my life, it was also the beginning of World War II. As a Jewish family, we were in a neighborhood that had people who were sympathetic to Nazi Germany. And I did experience anti-Semitism in a very dramatic way, not unlike some of the stuff that's happening today about because of entirely different kinds of environmental pressures. But at that time, those environmental pressures led to me having street fights, fisticuffs, and having to defend essentially my birthright, even though I was born in the United States. I did participate beginning in like middle school in competitive sports. I played football. I played basketball. But my best sport was track. And as I went into high school, I became co-captain of the Whitefish Bay track team. My events were low and high hurdles and sprints, and I ran low and high hurdles and the sprints. I always was involved also in the off-season in intramural sports and competed. And after I graduated from high school and went to college, my freshman year at the University of Wisconsin, I did try out for the track team. It was not a great experience because they had limited resources. And so when I ran a race against somebody from Michigan State, for example, I ran at Camp Randall Field in Wisconsin. They did a stopwatch of my race, and then they sent it to Michigan, and they sent a stopwatch race of my competitor. So we didn't actually go face to face. That is the truth. I did train for that, and I found that it was more time consuming than it gave me a benefit. So I stopped doing the competitive athletics, but I did compete intramurally. I played on my college fraternity football team, and I did participate in other sports of the moment. And I did walk and run, and I tried to stay active. And as I moved into adult life and became a lawyer, I always had some connection with an athletic facility. And I would go in there and I would do calisthenics and I would do weightlifting, not heavy weights, not to be strong like you two guys are, but just to give some tone to my muscles. And I always tried to have a reasonable diet, and I was conscious of weight. And I always tried to keep my weight within the parameters of my height and not be too heavy. Now, from time to time, I fell off that road, fell off that road. You know, I became aware of the fact that I fell off the road, and I was sufficiently concerned about my physical well-being that I took positive steps to kind of correct, if you will, either my inactivity or my dietary habits. And so as I sit here talking to you now, you know, I have a pretty reasonable diet. It's not the perfect diet. I don't sit down and have a hearty breakfast in the morning. I have a cup of coffee. I have lunch intermittently, sometimes healthy and sometimes not. and I try to eat my main meal at dinner, which is not the best approach to weight regulation. But my appetite is down, and I don't feel bad about that. I try to stay away from high caloric foods, and I think that at the end of the day, it gives me the ability to respond better to when health issues come and challenge me.
That's great. What would you say your favorite comfort food is now?
Well,
or a couple. That's kind of a loaded question. I know you probably have a couple.
Scotch on the rocks with some
there we go.
Cheese olives. You know, I kind of like that. I also like, you know, red wine. I've got a phone call here. I don't think I have to take it.
Can't. Tell them to go away.
I'm not going to take it.
There you go.
But I love it. You know, I have a wife who is a registered nurse by education, and she pretty much monitors, you know, what I eat and what I drink. And she also does push that I exercise. And she's not pushing me to exercise so that I can show my glutes and what have you. She does it so that I have the capacity to breathe and walk. And as I've gotten older, I have some balance issues. And so I'm conscious of that. I've had a couple of falls, which caused some injuries. And I've got a trainer now once a week, and she takes me through an hour of kind of balance exercises, walking and various dips and what have you, and stretching, and nothing that is body building, but it's orientation times movement.
Yeah, which is great. And I will say, but before we move off of, I know your favorite food seemed to be alcoholic beverages, but I also say that
that's not my favorite food.
One of the blue cheese and olives in there.
I want to throw in that you make amazingly awesome ribs on the grill. Yeah. That's one of your specialties. His ribs,
there we go,
are the best. Yeah. He makes a chili that has won awards, at least in your condo.
I just made an
award winning chili.
And mine is much better than his. I mean, I'll tell him.
I love a good chili. All right. So when we get offline, I'm going to ask for some recipes so I can try this out.
Your chili's awesome. And you also have always been great at making like tenderloin and rack of lamb. He's a very good, he's a good barbecue chef.
Well, I started when I was 16 years old. I was a pizza delivery guy. And the Italian guy that owned the restaurant, he took me under his wing as kind of like an adopted son. And he taught me some things to do in the kitchen to convert raw materials into edible food. And I've been interested in that. And then there was a long period of time after my marriage to Todd's mom went south. And I was a bachelor for a period of time. And I was living alone most of the time. I was a cook. And I experimented with a lot of things. And I very much enjoyed doing it rather than going to a fast food joint.
That's awesome.
Love it. You also, I know, back to your athletic thing, I remember when I was growing up, you played in a pretty heavy-duty touch football weekly game for a long time. Like, how long was that? That was like into your 40s.
I think I played until I was in my mid-30s. Yeah.
Yeah.
At least, yeah.
Yeah, because I was just going to ask that. Were there any like fun recreational thing, especially early in your career? We all go through this transition. You kind of mentioned it earlier of you're super active, and then all of a sudden, you know, career and life and family commitments take over. So your schedule gets thrown off, and then you're not nearly as active as you used to be, and then you kind of get back into it again. So what does so when you were playing the football, would you say it was tag? Like tag football?
It was two tag, you know, and it was push and shove a little bit.
Yeah.
And I was a tailback, and I ran a lot. And it was enjoyable. You know, sometimes you get bumps and bruises and leg injuries. I never had any serious injuries playing intramural football, but people that played with me did, you know, just depending on the quirks and circumstances.
That's the luck of the draw, right?
Yeah.
Sure. Sure. And how long did you keep that up? How many years did you end up playing that with your crew?
Well, I think that when I got married the first time, I was 22 years old. And I think that I was involved in a kind of a seasonally weekly football game into my 30s. So I would say for 10 or 12 years, I did that. And I also did a little bit of jogging, and I also walked a lot, but I always was conscious of the fact that there's a relationship, in my opinion, between good mental health and good physical health. And my observations have borne out the fact that if you see people walking around and they're 20, 30, 40 pounds overweight, they usually are 4 points under intellect. I think there is a relationship, whether it's because of the fact that your body does not have the response time when you're out of shape to make quick decisions about intellectual things or not. I don't know, but I do think that there is a global relationship between physical and mental well-being. And if you are physically in good health, I think that you are normally in better position to be in good mental health.
Yep.
I have had visits from some serious cancer, and I was treated dramatically for it. And I am undoubtedly of the view that my combination of physical activity has contributed to my response time. I was honored a week ago the American Cancer Society had an annual fundraising event called the Dinner of Champions. I was their champion. And
that's amazing.
And love that. I did speak and gave a speech, which was intended to be somewhat inspirational. And the goal of the speech was to ensure everybody there that when you hear something like or other health issues that can lead to your demise, that if you invest with good doctors a willpower to recover and survive, it beats the medicine at the pharmacy. And I'm a great believer in that.
Well, and I have to say, you are, you know, you're such a positive guy and you're inspirational every day because, you know, I talk to you regularly, obviously, and you're at the age that you're at and you have your ups and downs and you have your little health issues and you're always looking at the bright side. Hey, yeah, it is what it is. I'll be fine tomorrow. A lot of other people kind of give into it. And I totally agree with your point that if you have a positive attitude, I mean, you can't overcome like a bullet to the heart, okay, with a positive attitude. You certainly can. You can you can certainly come out of things much easier than if you start to, like, you know, look at the downside and feel sorry for yourself. And, you know, you've had
negativism. Negativism contributes to your inability to respond positively. Okay. So I think there is a clear interrelationship between the positivity of your attitude and the well-being of your physicality. And I have subscribed to that forever.
Yeah, and believe that there is a discipline that you had for yourself over the years that likely helped you get through that. You've kind of talked about it already, about the fact that you were stayed active, you were conscious of the necessity to stay in good quality shape. That helps you with your practice and being an attorney, just keeping the mind sharp and just the discipline of the day-to-day of the actual job that you did probably played a bit of a role when you did cross come across, you know, having to be on the back end of surviving cancer, and that you knew what discipline was and what was required in order for you to become whole again.
Well, that's a good observation, and I endorse everything you said. And also, being a criminal defense trial lawyer and as a criminal prosecuting lawyer, there is a need, if you are going to be successful in the pursuit of those activities, to have the ability to organize your communication skills in a way that you can effectively communicate with people. And once again, I honestly believe that there is a discipline that's required to do that. And I think that there is unquestionably a relationship between your fitness and effectiveness, if you will, to be a successful communicator, and your physical fitness. And I don't think that you can go down the road of either the endeavor of being an effective communicator and or of lifting weights in the gym, which, you know, I think is wasteful if all you're interested in is having muscles that you can oil up and impress other guys with muscles with oil on them.
Yeah, make them usable.
Yeah, make them usable. And the show is in the totality of the human being as a communicator. And you communicate by how you appear, and you communicate by how you sound. And I have always attempted to be someone who is pleasant enough to interact with from a visual point of view, dress well, be well-groomed, and to select your words with some advisability of getting to the point. Yep. People who go on and on and on, and at the end of any period of time, whether it's 5 minutes or 5 hours, you say, well, what did he say? That means you're not a good communicator.
Well, I'll tell you, Dad, that you have definitely got a reputation of going on and on sometimes, but you're never without the right communication. The story is always good. We have a thing where, and you're getting better finally in your late 80s, but we used to laugh that we were driving like to Madison to go to a game from Milwaukee. It's about 70 miles. That Dad can't tell a story that isn't less than three counties long.
Frank, to your defense, my mom is the exact same way.
Well, I love your mom without even seeing her or knowing her.
Yeah. Todd got a chance to sit with her at one of my football games that I was coaching a few weeks ago. I mean,
there is, as they say in life, there's a time and a place for everything. And we have an annual holiday party here at the law firm. And traditionally, after the meal, I give the history of the firm. And I have a 5-minute version. And then I have a 10-minute version. And this year, they're begging me for the 20-minute version.
Oh, my God. They're going crazy.
They want all the details, all the juice.
Well, because these kids that we have working here, you know, I was a lawyer for 40-plus years before they were born.
That's true.
And, right.
And during that period of time, you know, I accumulated an enormous amount of experience. And what they want to get in a 15-minute talk about how did this law firm get started, who is this guy, Frank Gimbel, whose name is at the front of the headline, you know, Gimbel, Riley, Garner, Brown. Who is Gimbel? And where does he come from? And sure. And how did he build this law firm? And, you know, there is a kind of a story that's associated with that. And if you're going to give a thorough story, then it's going to take a little more than 3 to 5 minutes.
You're right.
I gave a speech at this cancer thing. I think I sent it to you, Todd. Did you see it?
No, I haven't looked at it yet because I was worried it's too long. But you told me it's only 8 minutes.
It's 8 minutes.
I'm going to watch it because I'm surprised you could do 8 minutes, but I'm glad.
Well,
you
shouldn't be because recently I've been doing much shorter speeches.
No, that's good.
Look, the fact that he has various lengths.
No, is, I like that.
I have sensitivity to getting hit over the head by my children about how long.
Sure.
I can tell you that one of your, and you can tell obviously even from this conversation, and I got a little bit of it, but not all of it, but I've had the good fortune over the years of sitting in on a couple of trials that you tried, some high level, you know, high profile, at least in Milwaukee, criminal trials where you're representing defendants. And I have to say, like, your ability to speak, to do an opening argument, a closing argument with very few notes, if any, and to have a beginning, a middle, and an end to your presentation. You know, I've tried it. I can do it. Not as well as you, but it's an art, man, and it's a skill, and you are one of the masters at it, and you can still do it at age 88, which is unbelievable.
Well, I'll tell you, when I was going to high school, I engaged extracurricular competition in forensics, and one of the things that I did was I did extemporaneous speeches, and what happened is you went to a contest at a school, and there might be 25 competitors. They would have a bowl, and inside the bowl, there'd be a bunch of slips of paper. I went in and I took out 5 slips of paper, and each slip of paper would have a topic. And one of the topics might be, how will the Hamas-Israel war end? That might be one topic. Another topic might be, will there be a total elimination of fossil fuel-driven automobiles, things of that nature. You had 1 minute to pick one of those topics, and then you had 1 hour to prepare a 5-minute speech. And I would bring with me magazines, Time Magazine, Newsweek. They're not very popular these days, but they were in that day. We didn't have television, okay?
Right.
We didn't have radio. And I would go in the room, and I would construct a speech on that topic. And as I told my son, Todd, and as I've told anybody who is interested in listening to me about my effective communication skills, get their attention dramatically by something in your first or second sentence and leave them with a very dramatic ending. And what you say in the middle is kind of immaterial. Now, in a five-minute speech, you know, you'd think that's very little time, but it's a lot of time if you think about what you can include in that period of time. And I was very effective, and I won a lot of prizes doing that. And I carried that skill with me into my later life. And I give credit to a lady named Lois Ramstack, who was my speech teacher in high school. And she was spectacular. If you'd look at her, you wouldn't stop to talk to her because you wouldn't think she'd know how to talk. She looked like a bag lady. But at the end of the day, she was an extraordinary teacher because she taught communication skills. And those communication skills were make contact with your audience, get their attention, and leave them thinking about you. And that's what's worked for me.
That's amazing.
Great. No, I absolutely love that. And I had some very similar experiences. As Todd knows, I worked in broadcast media advertising for almost 20 years. And a lot of those same principles apply.
So, yes, they do.
Because I was a lot of times I was the middle person in between the client. I worked for Disney for several years, and being able to explain to the client whatever the television networks wanted us to communicate to them, it had to be sharp, concise, and short, because we're dealing with 210 markets across the country, and there's a lot of stuff to look at. And on the flip side of that, being able to take that experience and apply it now to coaching and training and being a strength and conditioning coach, especially in a group setting, like when I have some of my groups, being able to communicate so everybody can get to work quickly, and being able to have a couple of different cues that everybody can understand and get moving on the next thing, because we only have a lot of times an hour, 45 minutes, 50 minutes, an hour, and being able to get all the work in, show the demo, give the actual specifics on what we're doing so that we can get all the work done in a short amount of time. I think that's really crucial. I think that's a really important message that you just gave there.
Well, I want to observe that the two of you are extraordinarily talented communicators, okay? and it's a delight for me to participate. You know, I have four children. Everyone is different, but of my four children, Todd is the most like his dad, and I take pride in that. Okay,
I have a little more hair, but not much.
Well, forget about the looks. I'm just talking about his soul and his optimistic view of life. He's just a wonderful young man.
That is very true. And he's got the worker bee mentality. Like, he comes in with his hard hat,
and
every time he's in, and I don't have to try to push him. He pushes himself.
He does.
And he meets the challenge that he's in.
I'll just tell you one last story, because I was at my grandchildren's parents' day this morning at university school. And they had a gathering of all the grandparents who were going to be there, just grandparents. And I had my name tag on. And this guy came up to me and he said, kind of a case of the week. I says, I was. And I was on Channel 6 probably for about 5 years. Once a week, I did a story in about a five-minute exchange. The last time I was on was 10 years ago. And this guy still had in his mind my five-minute conversations.
That's on television. Awesome.
And if you go on Google and look for me, you'll find some of those conversations.
Yeah. Let me go look. For sure.
And it was what I learned, as I said, from Lois Ramstack. Know your subject, get their attention, and end on a high note.
Leave them.
And you will make them think they've exhausted the subject in 5 minutes.
That's true.
You don't have to speak long. And that's worked for me in the courtroom. It's worked for me. I argued a case in the United States Supreme Court. I've argued in appellate courts all over the country. I've tried jury trials. I've been successful and not successful, obviously depending upon the story I'm telling. And it's hard to justify someone killing two other people. But at the end of the day, you can't eliminate the body. But I have found that there definitely is a method to effective communication. You two have, in my opinion, embraced that method, and you both are extraordinary communicators. And I like to think that to the extent that it's real, that I have influenced some people that I've had some supervisory authority over or influence over to kind of follow that model, if you will, like a teacher in high school did for me, and some of the admired speakers that I've seen, effective trial lawyers. Get your message out, get the attention of the audience, and come to a conclusion which leaves them thinking about what you said.
That's great, Bob. And you know, I've been inspired by you. I try to emulate. I'm not quite as good, but I have my own skill set. But it's great to have a role model like you, not just for me. I know you've been a role model for lots of people. And how long's the firm has been around? For what, 50 plus years, correct?
Or more than that? I left the United States Attorney's Office in 1968, and I opened this law firm. So that's 55 years ago. And as I say, we have, I think, 18 or 20 lawyers. I'm not exactly sure. But of the 18 or 20 lawyers, I think perhaps four of them were alive when I started this law firm.
I was.
We're not born yet.
I was a short-term member of the firm, but moved on to bigger and better things. But look, we're so thrilled to have you with us. We're going to have you again because you are.
I'm going to show you this thing, by the way, before we.
Oh yeah, we got to see that. Got to see that picture.
Yeah, we got to see the picture.
We're with the for the listeners here. We are football. We are sports connoisseurs here. So this is
the it says Visions of Glory. It's a picture of the Packer glory years. I see Vince Lombardi, Bart Starr, Paul Hornung, Donnie Anderson, Ray Nitschke, all those guys. Man, that is an awesome.
That is
awesome,
really cool.
Portrait.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Whose signatures are those down at the bottom?
Are those, is it signed, Dad?
Yep.
I find that this interview was enjoyable and entertaining and useful. And I wish you both a wonderful Thanksgiving.
One thing before you go.
Yes, sir.
If you have one piece of advice on fitness for people who are, you know, in their 80s, what would it be? What is the one or two things you think people can do?
In their 80s, so anybody who's so older yeah. than Todd, younger than
yeah,
you.
Anybody older than me. What would you say to do regularly
window.
To try to keep yourself
I
keep
would
yourself
say
up?
That none of us know when we're going to be born, and none of us know when we're going to die. But between the time we're born, and that's a reality, and the time we die, never stop moving. Moving in every way with your head and with your body. And God willing, you know, you won't have some physical impediment that forecloses you from doing that. And even if you do, you'll find ways to augment. If you're in a wheelchair, there's ways to move. Keep moving. It doesn't have to be a Charles Atlas fitness class. It can be taking a walk to the corner a dozen times, you know, and yep. things of that nature. Are you there?
Yeah, we're here.
Yep.
We're here. We're good.
Okay. I think I lost you.
Oh, well, we got
yep,
you.
We're here.
Look at
oh, you.
We
got you.
Yep. Okay. Dad, it's been all great right. to have you. Thank you so much for being with us. You're an amazing
awesome.
Inspiration.
Thank you so much,
guy.
Frank. Appreciate it.
Love
Thanks,
you guys.
Bob.
Stay
love
well.
You too.
Be healthy. And
love
don't
you,
stop man. Moving. Got it?
Don't stop
we
moving.
Got it, man.
Continue to move with intent.
Move with intent.
Take care, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Thanks, Dad.